Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. My favorite time on Sunday, or should I say Saturday? It is Saturday, isn't it, Richard?
Last time I checked, Carolyn, I think it was still Saturday, but you
Who
can have it be
knows?
Sunday if you wish.
Well, I'm here. Today's Saturday, and I brought one of my favorite people.
That's wonderful, Carolyn. Truly wonderful. Was that Balthazar you were talking about or somebody else?
It's really talking about you.
Oh, okay.
And
So, welcome everyone.
indeed, as you know, if you get our newsletter, that Balthazar, you might say, is on stage tonight. But one of the things that I do want to speak a little bit about is the soul and the connection to their monad. And if you look at it this way and think about a monad, you might come to the conclusion or the thought that there's a lot of soul particles that has formed the monad. In other words, when Prime Creator in the center of the cosmos created souls, he created the monad and gave a tremendous amount of particles that belong to Prime Creator that formed the monads. Now, coming down to the monad and how the monad then sends a finger of its consciousness into this dimension, we call it incarnation. So we have particles coming from the monad being sent here to Earth, and Richard's monad sent a bit of its soul particles to Earth, the same way as mine, the same way as each and every one of you. Now, when we cross over, those particles are not destroyed. You have all of your experiences. You don't lose them. And the monad will send the next lifetime another finger of consciousness so that you have a new identity, you have a new name. But each time that the monad sends particles of itself into this plane, it's called incarnation, and we think of it in terms of reincarnation, meaning these souls come to Earth. In a sense, they are all related to one another, but they are distinct and individual when they cross over. They don't lose their memories when they cross over. And so it is really fascinating how we have from knowledge from working with the different souls, one being Balthazar that we're going to be talking to tonight. And something that we want to bring forth is that Balthazar's monad sent fingers of consciousness to Earth that we recognize as Master Kuthumi. We had Master Kuthumi on this program, and he discussed the fact that his soul was created very early, or the monad was created very early in that moment when there was the creation of souls going on. And so there was Pythagoras. We had Pythagoras on the radio show also. Saint Francis of Assisi. Now Balthazar, all coming from the same master soul. Or shall I say, the same monad? Well, what happens is each one of these individuals have gathered experiences, and they, along with us, are able to share that information, able to share those experiences with the different souls. So you might say we have years and years, centuries, eons, where all of this information has been gathered, and we have access. Excuse me. If we know how to cooperate, know how to reach this, we as a soul today have access to all of the information that our counterparts have gathered. And so we have Balthazar, who is a magnificent soul, as all of the others were magnificent. And we will speak somewhat and hear somewhat of his nobility, who he was, who he is, in case you don't understand this or has some knowledge of it. Balthazar was one of the magi that came and visited Yeshua when he was born. He was also the king of Syria. Richard, I've got a little cough going here. Would you talk a little bit about Balthazar, please?
I'd be happy to do that. So, yes, Balthazar was the king of Syria, which is perhaps not well understood. He was also Mary Magdalene's grandfather, which also is not perhaps not so well understood. And the royal connections of both Yeshua and Mary Magdalene have been, in one way or another, fairly blurred by the history that has come down to us for various reasons. And so though that couple carried great royal bloodlines, you might say, and Balthazar, as Carolyn mentioned, was one of the Magi. And the Magi were a group who, along with the Essenes, could trace their roots back to Atlantis. And indeed, the Magi had carried over many lifetimes some key information, key secrets, if you will, key knowledge. And they carried that knowledge in several forms. They carried it in oral form. They carried it also in written form, in the form of some documents. And also, they carried some key technology, which lasted through to about the time of Balthazar, indeed, about the time of Yeshua. So there are some interesting threads to the one that we know of as Balthazar. Do you want to pick up the story, Carolyn?
Yes, Richard, and I thank you for doing that. Had a little tickle in my throat that couldn't get rid of until I took some water. And I feel that this discussion with Balthazar is going to bring forth great information from a very great being that perhaps we're not familiar with the individual story, but the general theme, so to speak. And so, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to call in Balthazar, I would appreciate it. And then what I would like for you to do, what you usually do, and do it so beautifully, is to connect to Balthazar's energy, to give us some sense of who he is as an individual. And I ask the audience, because many people who listen to us have the kind of talents that they can tune in and pick up Balthazar's energy. And so I ask you to look into your third eye and perhaps envision the Christ child. You might say this is his month, being December, when we celebrate his birthday. But that's another story, isn't it? Picture Balthazar with the three kings that came to see him, and that one that wore a turban on his head. And feel in the heart center, that area where there is the beating heart, the heart mind, the heart chakra, that triangular configuration where we have that threefold flame burning. Concentrate upon that. And when Richard discusses Balthazar and what he feels like energetically, you might feel the same thing. Just relax. Just open up your heart center and listen and feel. Now, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to call in Balthasar and describe his energy, we would appreciate it.
Certainly. Yes, he's here. And I find it fascinating on these radio shows because as Carolyn discusses this notion, they come so powerfully to me. Great energy comes to me as they come in. It's like they bring particular focus, much more than I usually experience connecting with these individuals. And so I experience Balthasar very powerfully. He is a very powerful soul. I experience him a little to what I would describe as left of center in this spectrum that I've spoken to you about before. And there is, as I said, great power, almost a singularity, it's like that soul had great intent, great focus on what he was here to do. And also, he does carry indeed a regalness about him. I sense that the individual, when he was incarnated, would have carried quite a charisma, would have been a very powerful individual just from his personal presence. And there is a great sense of truth about this individual, great sense of truth and indeed of love. So a very, very powerful experience, very powerful individual.
That's beautiful, Richard. And I hope as Richard was discussing this, that you and the audience can pick this up also, that you can feel a sense of this gentleman, his nobility, his calmness. I feel this great calmness about him as I listen to what you said, Richard. And that is associated with this regalness that he was, but this great wisdom. I feel this great wisdom and, as you said, love. And another thing that comes forth, at least for me, is the sense of honor. And so with that, Balthasar has a message. He's rather excited about it, anxious to tell our audience what he has in mind. So, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to take his message, I would appreciate it.
I very much appreciate the opportunity to come forth in this manner. It is truly a gift to me to be able to speak to you who are listening tonight and to all those who at some point listen to this recording. Because even though there is but a small group of people who listen to this recording over the next few days and weeks, with time, the numbers that will seek out these recordings will be quite extraordinary, as the understandings of the work that is to unfold becomes better understood and known in the world. And so I speak not only to those of you who are listening tonight, but I speak to everyone who hears this recording at any point in time. And it truly is, in a sense, a remarkable opportunity to seemingly speak to you from the past. I lived upon your beautiful planet some 2,000 or so years ago, as you understand, and played a role in the preparation, you might say, of the mission not only of Yeshua, but of his spouse, Mary Magdalene. as Carolyn and Richard said, I was one of the Magi. And for the most part, your history records the Magi simply through the Bible story of three kings coming to visit the baby Yeshua. And having followed that star, if you will, to find the newborn. And whilst there is certainly truth of the Star of Bethlehem, we were far more informed of the coming forth of this one than that story might suggest. As you understand it, I had a deep connection with the one you know of as Yeshua, because it was indeed on the same day that my granddaughter, who was to be his spouse, was also born. It was a special day, a day of great power, a day that was to trigger, if you will, the great gifts and abilities that those two displayed. It was no accident that they were born on the day that they were born. Yeshua early that day, Mary Magdalene late on that same day. And so I had a great connection to that time. And as they said, the Magi were a group who remembered Atlantis, remembered that time, and set out with a particular mission. And that particular mission was to carry knowledge, wisdom, skills, and understanding down through time from that final fall of Atlantis some 13,000 odd years ago down to Yeshua's time. Because it was well understood, even as the fall in Atlantis was being planned, that the mission that Yeshua and Mary Magdalene came to fulfill was going to be required. And so the key focus of the Magi above all else was to carry that knowledge, wisdom, and understanding in both oral and written form down through time, protect it in secrecy until it could be delivered to Yeshua and to Mary Magdalene so that they could undertake the enormously important work that was their mission in order to make possible what is about to unfold beginning at the end of next year, the end of 2012. You see, we understood that the DNA of humanity needed to be refreshed in a very powerful way. We also understood that the energetic connections, if you will, from this very dense dimension to which humanity and the Earth sank needed to be reconnected to the higher dimensions so that the ascension process was possible. And several other things that those two undertook whilst they were here on Earth. And so you might say my lifetime as a Magi and as a king in Syria was the culmination of that journey of the Magi down through those some 11,000 years. And that culmination was expressed in many forms. Yes, it was through the skills and abilities that we carried down, and documents were given to Yeshua's parents at his birth amongst other gifts. There were scrolls that were given in trust to his parents. But also, there was another important step which I undertook, and that was the very careful training of my daughter, Mary of Magdala, who was Mary Magdalene's mother. And what is not well understood is that Mary of Magdala was Yeshua's first teacher. And so she played a critical role in the initial preparation, if you will, the initial training, the initial opening of the doors of both Yeshua and Mary Magdalene when they were very young children. Indeed, Yeshua spent quite a deal of his very earliest times with Mary of Magdala. And so, in a way, the knowledge of the Magi began its transfer to Yeshua and to Mary Magdalene at an extremely early age, because it was understood that the more this training could be started early, the more easily they would remember who and what they were and what they had come to do. And so these were important threads. And there was one further important thread, and that is from a genetic perspective. Most of humanity looks at genetics from the perspective of what gets passed down through a family line. And there is certainly truth in that. What is not recognized is the contribution that is made to the genetic pool, the DNA of an individual from their monad. And this is in two forms. One is the power, if you will, the authority and the wisdom that that soul carries, that monad carries, but also the number of soul particles which are sent forth for that individual soul. And there was indeed a great deal of preparation from a genetic perspective to bring forth what was required through the children of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. Because some of you understand that the human DNA was refreshed in a very powerful way through that work. And this has been perhaps conveyed most powerfully through those newsletters that Carolyn has begun to bring forth from Yeshua, called Yeshua Then and Now, because he talks about this in quite a detail. And you will understand, perhaps, that the two parents of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were both aspects of, on the female side, on the feminine side, the high cherubim angel Allura, and on the masculine side, the two Josephs, were aspects of Archangel Sandalphon. And this was done to ensure powerful input, if you will, from the grandparents of those children of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. But indeed, it was actually started a generation before that, indeed beyond that, because I too brought great power to that equation. And so there were many elements that I was bringing forth to support that mission. That mission that came forth with Yeshua and Mary Magdalene was certainly no accident. As I have indicated, it was actually planned from before the fall in Atlantis. And a great deal of work was done on so many levels to prepare for that time. Indeed, the Essenes, of which Mary Magdalene and Yeshua arose from, you might say, was a group that themselves could trace their roots back to Atlantis and carried great knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, some of which they too gathered from the Magi. So I am really painting my lifetime, if you will, my mission, in the context of its true flowering, which was the coming forth of that mission that was fulfilled by that duo, that extraordinary couple in Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And so this is perhaps my message to you, is that understanding of that preparation, and the preparation that I in many ways contributed to as what you might consider the end of the line of the Magi, and also in a sense the end of the line of the Essenes, because if you examine history, the Essene group essentially fell apart quite rapidly after the crucifixion, when both Yeshua and Mary Magdalene moved to France. And I do not wish to diminish my other roles that I fulfilled in that lifetime, firstly as a king in Syria, but really for your understanding, the areas that I have focused on are perhaps the most important for you to grasp and for me to share with you. And I would simply like to end by saying the final flowering of those lifetimes is really about to arise in your time, in a little over a year from now, as the extraordinary processes that will unfold over a period of about 3 months, beginning with that December 2012 solstice, this process of the reawakening of humanity and its return to the glory that was held at the time of Atlantis and beyond. And so it is.
Thank you, Balthazar. You've brought forth so much information that would probably be new to a lot of people, and I thank you for that. Would like to flesh out a few details in your story. And you speak of the mission of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, and I know from my own work with them that there was a great many threads to their mission. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because what has been passed down by way of religious doctrine is so much is centered around the crucifixion of Yeshua and not really all of these other threads that we know was to be is true in his mission. So would you be kind enough to give us a little bit of insight as to how you perceived the mission of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene?
I saw many threads to that mission. Firstly, there was the time that they spent in healing and, you might say, awakening those that lived in that region, because it was important to leave a marker, you might say, for history through the gifts that they bring, that they brought forth, and the skills that they demonstrated, the extraordinary healing work that they undertook together, because that healing work was not done by Yeshua in isolation, though he was seen as, you might say, the front man. Indeed, it was work that he and Mary Magdalene did together, she in the background, he in the foreground. And so that was an important piece of work to undertake. It sowed also seeds of understanding, seeds of what you might call and what Yeshua called the way of righteousness. And what you understand of the word righteousness and the way Yeshua used it were a little different, because the true origin of that word really is interesting to examine, because it does come through into your language, and that is right useness. Right useness of energy, right useness of the spiritual skills and abilities of the human being. It had been very much lost for a long time. And so they came forth to demonstrate those skills and abilities to humanity. And that marker has remained through to your time, albeit it has been distorted in many ways. So this was an important step. That aspect of their mission, in a sense, ended with the crucifixion. So many of humanity have come to believe, courtesy of the teachings of the Catholic Church, that Yeshua came to die on the cross, supposedly for the sins of humanity. And this entire picture is a creation of the Catholic Church, because it has no truth to it whatsoever. Yeshua did not come to be crucified. It was not a necessary part of his mission. It was recognized before he came that it was a very strong possibility that it might occur, and as his mission proceeded, it became a very high probability. And so Yeshua began to plan accordingly. And so whilst that event unfolded, he was crucified, as has been shared with you by others on these radio shows. He did not die on that cross. And if the evidence, even from that time, is examined, that has been recorded in the Bible, is examined closely, the evidence is there that he did not die. Indeed, he went into what you might call a stupor, in a sense. He understood how to still his bodily signs. His maternal grandmother, Anna, understood how to still her bodily signs, and indeed understood how to leave her body, you might say, embalmed for decades at a time, and then return. And so she had great skills in this regard and shared many of those skills with Yeshua. And there were others also who contributed to those skills and abilities. So he understood how to still the bodily signs. And also he was assisted on the cross with the herbs and so on that were given to him, which again is recorded in the Bible. And so Yeshua did not die. He was very close to death, but he did not die, and he was taken and placed in that tomb. And again, as has been recorded through this work, it was during his time in that tomb that he had chosen to do the work necessary to connect the dimensions once more, to reconnect those, you might say, strings of light between this dense dimension that you currently now reside in and the angelic dimension to which you will ascend. He knew that he had to do this work at some time, And he did not have to be crucified to do it. But he recognized that this was a good opportunity, a good time at which to undertake this work. And so he undertook this extraordinary, powerful work. And as has been mentioned before, the impact of this extraordinary work, the extraordinary energies that returned to his body, imprinted that shroud that was covering his body, and you might say produced that seemingly photographic image that it carries even today, that shroud that you know of as the Shroud of Turin. And so this was the second important part of their mission, which was to reconnect these energetic lines, you might say. The third key element of their mission, as I perceive it, was the work through their children, the refreshing of the human DNA. And it began with their three children and then spread out through humanity so that this refreshing process could be completed, because without this, the reactivation of the human DNA to over 2,000 DNA strands that it had prior to the fall in Atlantis would not have been possible. And this was for several reasons. And so this, I see, as again a critical aspect of their mission. And the fourth key aspect, as I see it, was the work that they then undertook in France after the crucifixion, work that they had planned to do, working with those powerful energetic gateways, the portals that exist in that area in France near Rennes-le-Château, because in many ways they were doing energetic preparation work for what will unfold in your time. You might say it was complementary to the work that Yeshua did to connect those energy lines between your dense dimension and the angelic dimension. In some ways, you might say they cultivated the necessary codes for the bringing forth of ascension, which will occur at the March 2013 equinox. And so these are the key elements that I see in their mission. Of course, there were many other minor threads, but these, to me, represent the key ones. You might add a further one, which is the teaching that Yeshua gave to his disciples in an attempt to have the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding that he had gathered and to see it spread. And many speak of that as having been very successful in some ways. I would judge that as being rather less successful, because really very few of his disciples truly understood what Yeshua was trying to teach them. It was intended that he spend a little more time with them than was possible, because the crucifixion came forth when it did. And so I would assess that as having been less successful than the other aspects of the mission, which certainly were fulfilled in their entirety.
That was a beautiful answer, and I appreciate that. Something that you said earlier that intrigues me, that Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were born on the same day, and we choose to come in when we do. And was this for astrological purposes, that the two of them came in to be born on the same day?
Indeed. This particular day was a day, astrologically, which supported the powerful skills and abilities that the two needed to display in their lifetimes. It was a day which supported very strongly the rapid awakening of their skills, their ability to communicate with other forms of consciousness beyond the veil that surrounds your planet. And also, it supported their ability to hold great amounts of energy in their bodies for the purposes of healing and other things. And so it was a day that had been carefully chosen a long, long time before. And so even the birthing of these two on that day was seen as an extraordinary victory, you might say. It was the building block that made their missions possible, along with others. But this was a very, very important aspect, the power of the day on which they were born. And I will add that Yeshua was born some 3 hours before sunrise, and Mary Magdalene was born some 3 hours after sunset. Again, this was no accident, because these times represent moments of greatest power for the coming forth of a soul.
That's beautiful. Are you free to tell us a date that they were born? And I say this because there is a lot of confusion about the calendars. And I don't know if this is a fair question to ask, if you're willing to share that with us.
It is difficult for me to convey this exactly accurately to Richard. But I will say to you that the date is relatively close in terms of years. The estimated year of Yeshua's birth by your calendars and so on is perhaps 3 years later than he was born. And in terms of the date that you celebrate his birthday, he in fact was born in what you would call the month of April, and of course Mary Magdalene also. And so perhaps amusingly, the date of his birth is very close to what you celebrate as the date of his death.
Thank you.
So it was around the middle of April.
I appreciate that. We knew that the December 25th date was an arbitrary date that the church had used to celebrate his birth. And there are many that do not believe that because of the traditions of Judaism. You mentioned also about the Bethlehem Star. What can you share with us about that? The star that we use in that celebration of Christmas that was in the sky when pointing the direction to Yeshua's birth.
This so-called star was in truth not a star, but it was a powerful conjunction of two planets. And it was a sign that was recognized. You today do not recognize the power that was given to events that arose in the sky. The acknowledgement of comets, for example, as prophets, not necessarily prophets of doom, although that is perhaps more the image that has come down into your time. Comets were seen as forecasters of powerful events, sometimes positive, sometimes negative. And this has been very powerful in human history for a long time. But also, key celestial alignments were acknowledged, they were tracked, and they were celebrated. There are those who have begun to recognize that the ancients had a tremendous level of understanding of the clockwork systems in the cosmos. So many places there are great buildings, if you will, which reflect an incredible understanding of the solar alignments, but also alignments of various star systems. And I include places such as Stonehenge, such as the Sphinx and the pyramids in Egypt, such as some of the ancient temples in Malta, and of course some of the well-known temples and other structures that the Mayans or the Maya were responsible for. And so there was a great deal of understanding of the gear wheels that unfolded in the cosmos. And so this great understanding was in place. And you might say, on some level, these things might seem to be accidental, but they are not. And you have seen some of this in the information that the two of you have brought forth in relation to the energies coming forth with various new moons and solstices and equinoxes in your current times. And so what has been known as the Star of Bethlehem represented a powerful conjunction of two planets, and because they were so closely aligned, it created a spot, you might say, of great brightness, but also a spot of great wonder as these two planets came together in this way and were very much in conjunction exactly on that day and then began to move apart again. And because there was not the pollution or the electric lights that you have everywhere in your towns and cities today, the awareness of these sorts of alignments was much more widespread amongst the community than it is today, because the stars and the planets and the moon shone out so much more brightly in those times.
What a beautiful and complete answer. And the last question I'm going to ask you, Balthazar, you would have known where baby Yeshua was born, I would assume. And so was it necessary for you to follow that star, or did you know ahead of time where you were going?
We knew exactly where we were going. The reason for mentioning the star, or that planetary alignment in truth, was because there was a need for prophecy to be fulfilled. Some might wonder why we would go and speak with Herod. It was an essential step for many reasons. Firstly, there was a matter of prophecy to be fulfilled, in the sense that it had been foretold of the coming forth of this royal bloodline individual. And it was important that this be acknowledged. Secondly, it would be discourteous and indeed potentially seen as a threat for myself and others to turn up in that area without announcing ourselves to the current king of that area, and this we would not do. And so we announced our presence, although we were also very secretive about where we actually went from there. So, yes, we were very aware. And as you would recognize, the Star of Bethlehem, as it became known, was scarcely so exactly positioned that we could locate the exact site of the birth of Yeshua. That, as you would recognize, is scarcely a practical notion.
I want to thank you, Balthazar, for all of this incredible information that you have given us. And I will tell you that the hour has slipped by so quickly, and if I could, I would ask more. But are you willing to come back another time and talk with us?
I would be willing to return if you feel it would be of value to do so. I am very appreciative of this opportunity, this vehicle to share my understandings as best as I am able to you in that time.
Well, you certainly have, and we really haven't had an opportunity to bring in the audience's questions, and so we could come back another time and attend to that. And I thank you, Balthazar, for your service. And I thank you, Richard, for your service also. We have, and I would just like to mention on Richard's behalf, it takes a great deal of energy to get questions and answers like this from people who come to us. Richard does this so beautifully that it seems like, you know, he's not stressed physically by doing this, but he truly is. It takes a lot of energy, and I want to thank you, Richard. You have been bringing forth Balthazar's information for almost an hour, and I know what that means to an individual. And we have 2 minutes, Richard, before the hour is up, if you can imagine that. And is there something that you would like to discuss with people that's on the drawing board, or something that you wish to, 1 minute now?
Well, I would just like to take the opportunity to firstly thank Balthazar for coming forth in this way and sharing his information and his time with us in this beautiful way. And also thank you, Carolyn, for the extraordinary job that you do, the role that you perform in setting up this context, because you make my role an easy one, preparing those questions as you do, and in your own way holding the space for the work that I do. So thank you for your role, because I know it's not trivial either. And I also know how challenging it has been for you to come forth in these times and bring these radio shows forth with all of the challenges and difficulties that you have been dealing with. So thank you.
Well, I guess we're both thanking each other.
There you go.
For us to leave.
Well, thank you, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I know I've certainly got quite a lot from bringing this forth. So take care. Till next time.
Indeed. Until next time. Good night for now from Carolyn and
Richard.
Richard.